all in mid-body.
Pure beef patty, lettuce, tomato.
You really think that just because you have an idea, it belongs to you?
You ain't never in your life heard a disc jockey come through here like me.
He mixes different quotes of people and a wide variety of songs, very, very freeform, which is the point of Darby and the Folks.
Push it right to the edge.
I got an unbelievable story to tell you, absolutely incredible.
I know you like two things I like. Chicken and chicks.
Just after me and John took it, Sue came up. Of course, it hadn't yet started to take effect, but right then, I got bad feelings. There's no going back, though. As soon as it's in your mouth, you've committed yourself, so to speak. Sue thought I owed her emotional support in her times of need, but I had decided I didn't want to sleep with her anymore. I didn't know how to tell her, so I just ignored her. After she finally left, red and blue squiggles began peeping out of the cracks on the wall. I didn't feel too good. My mouth was dry. I wanted to throw up. John turned on the TV and selected an empty channel. We watched the snow, waiting for a poltergeist. I slumped down in my chair, and the screen gripped to the floor.
Freak sucks.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of this show's producer, WMFO, its staff and management, or Tufts University.
You have the power to be all good, all wise, and all powerful. Why would you make the world you have now?
I don't know. I was really drunk at the time.
I was not drunk. I was on pills.
My show, I can do whatever I want, so I am.
I want you to do like I do.
And let's not kid ourselves about this. I believe very sincerely and deeply in LSD as a sacrament and the psychedelic way of life. The chances are that I'm wrong, because as a visionary prophet, you know, it's 1 out of 100 that you're right and 99 out of 100 that you're a nut. That's the chance of the game, but history will tell.
Wow, your story is very compelling.
Where is it? I've never heard any music like this in my life before. And if I ever have, I don't know where I heard it.
Get your own show. Play your own music.
Funneling layers. Hook up on top of one another.
There was a peasant woman named Maimuna, and she lived near the sea. And Maimuna was always praying, and her manner of praying was to say, Maimuna loves Allah, and Allah loves Maimuna. And one day, as she was doing this, a saint walked by. He heard her saying, Maimuna loves Allah, and Allah loves Maimuna. And he said to her, no, no, that's not the way to pray. And he told her the words one should say and went on his way. The saint had a rug, and he placed it on the waves and climbed onto it and went sailing out into the sea. Maimuna stayed behind, trying to pray as he had told her, but she forgot part of what he had said. She saw the saint moving away out into the sea on his rug, and she ran down to the edge of the water and began to call after him. He did not hear her. Then she began to run across the top of the water until she got to the rug where he was sitting. "Excuse me," she said, "would you mind telling me again how to say that?" He stared at her and said, "Don't think about it. You're a greater saint than I am. I have to have my rug if I want to travel on the water, but you can do it on foot."
There is unrest in the forest. There is trouble with the trees. For the maples want more sunlight and the oaks ignore their pleas.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Tears of the Gods sound collage. That's right. It's not just a radio program. It's a sound collage with audio clips from movies, from TV shows, from documentaries, from who knows where, mixed in between and on top of the music that always matches a theme in one way or another. And it's only here on WMFO in Medford, Tufts Freeform Community Radio. And tonight, we're bringing you a theme called Stories. Every song that I play for you is going to have a real story behind it. And because this is a Tears of the Gods, we've got a feature for you. Featured artists tonight, the Canadian progressive rockers Rush, who over the last few months I've played a bunch of them for you, and I hope you're warming up to them if you haven't already before. Right, Arthur? Yes. So Rush, yes, they've had the same trio lineup since 1974. There are from Canada, although Alex Lifeson's originally from Serbia, and they're all outstanding musicians, and their drummer and lyricist Neil Peart is known for writing some of the most literate lyrics in rock music. And in particular, in the second hour of the show, we're going to be hearing the entire side one of their 1976 album 2112. Yes, the story of 2112 and a young man who finds a guitar and makes his own music and thinks it's a wonderful thing, only to find out, well, the priests of the Temple of Syrinx sure don't think so. Tonight's episode is very personal for me. In place of most of my usual audio clips from, well, who knows where, I'm going more in tonight's episode with some excerpts from a short novel that I wrote my final year of college. I actually got bachelor's degrees in both computer science and philosophy, and I wrote Dare essentially as my senior thesis. And at the beginning of the show, you heard an excerpt in the beginning set. It was setting the scene in the story by talking about taking LSD. Yes, that powerful hallucinogen that was most popular in the 1960s, but it was certainly available when I was in college way back when. And I haven't used it in decades, but I'll tell you, it sure had a truly profound impact on my life in ways that I think were mostly good. Some of the most beautiful experiences I've ever had, as well as, well, some of the scariest have involved psychedelic substances. And if you're interested in understanding how consciousness and human perception really work, I think psychedelics could be an incredible tool. Gifts from the gods, almost. But let me also say they're not for everybody, and you know, it's something to be approached with great care, and the right circumstances, the right settings are important. And on some of the times I took it, well, that wasn't quite the case, which made it a learning experience. Well, in that intro clip about me and John, I was also playing the guitar behind it. Not at the time, but that was a piece of music that I composed called Playing in the Pasture. And, there are a couple more excerpts from my short novel there, Dare, coming up in tonight's mix of music and stories. Songs that tell a story. So our ambiance tonight is not telling any stories, directly, but
all of our backing music tonight will be from the 19th century Czech composer Anton Dvorak, who was a real bohemian, known for taking his country's folk music, their traditions, and turning them into symphonic forms, such as we have behind me right now, Dvorak's Largo, this as performed by the Slovak Philharmonic Orchestra. So, as far as the next set goes, we're going to be hearing from the Steve Miller Band. We're going to be hearing a top hit from 1968, the Harper Valley PTA by Jeannie Riley. And the Presidents of the United States have a great story about a tiki god. And also Elvis Presley and Rush. Rush, another one of their wonderful story songs, Red Barchetta, talking about time in the future when automobiles such as we know them are outlawed, but a guy's uncle has one that he keeps out in his country place, and well, they have an adventure about that, and that's what that story is. But we're going to begin the set with what was really the seed crystal for this idea of a show devoted to story songs. And I'd like to thank Chuck Yu for that. In particular, in 2014, he made a compilation, Music on My Radio, that he gave to a number of us as part of a holiday greetings. And that's the first time I was exposed to this very, very deep song. It's traditional, but this is a performance by Doc Watson. And it's, it's going way back a bit in time. And it's about a woman, a king, and a young man named Matty Groves. Here on the Tears of the God Sound Collage, WMFO in Medford.
Was on the high holy day, the very best day in the year. Little Matty Groves had gone to church, holy words for to hear, holy words for to hear. The first to come down was dressed in red, and the second one dressed in green. The third to come down was Lord Daniel's wife, as fair as any queen, just as fair as any queen. Then Matty Groves says to one of his men, see the fair one dressed in white, although she is Lord Daniel's wife, I'll be with her tonight, I'll be with her tonight. Well, the little foot page was a standing by, and he heard every word that was said. He says, Lord Daniel shall know tonight, before I go to bed, before I go to bed. Miles for to go that night, and 10 of them he run. He run till he come to the broke down bridge, then he bent to his breast and he swum. He bent to his breast and he swum. He swum till he come to where the grass was green. He took to his feet and he run. He run till he come to Lord Daniel's gate. He rattled at the bells and the rung. He rattled at the bells and the rung. What news, what news, Lord Daniel says, what news to me have you brung? Little Matty Groves is in the bed with your wife, and their hearts both beat as one, and their hearts both beat as one. Now if the truth you've told to For me, a rich man you shall be. But if a lie you've told to me, I'll hang you to a tree. I'll hang you to a tree. He gathered him up, about 50 good men. He done it with a free good will. Then he popped his bugle unto his lips, and he blowed it loud and shrill. He blowed it loud and shrill. I'd better get up, said a little Matty Groves. I better get up and go. I know your husband is coming home, for I hear his bugle blow. I hear his bugle blow. Lay down, my precious one. Lay down and go to sleep. It's only my father's shepherd's horn, and he's a-calling for his sheep. He's a-calling for his sheep. So they lay down together again, and they soon were fast asleep. And when they awoke, it was broad daylight, Lord Daniel at their feet, Lord Daniel at their feet. Get up from there, you naked man, and put you on some clothes. I never intend for to have it said that a naked man I slow, that a naked man I slow. Give me a chance, said little Matty Groves, a chance to fight for my life. For there you have two very fine swords, and me not as much as a knife, and me not as much as a knife. Oh, yes, I have two very fine swords, and they cost me deep in the purse. You may have the finest one, and I will take the worst. Yes, I will take the worst. Then Matty Groves struck the very first lick, and he wounded Lord Daniel's sword. Lord Daniel struck the very next lick, and he drove Matty Groves to the floor. He drove Matty Groves to the floor. And then he taken his lady by the hand, and he set her on his knee. And he says, now which do you love the best, little Matty Groves or me? Little Matty Groves or me? Very well, I like your rosy cheeks. Very well, I like your chin. But better I love little Matty Groves than you and all of your kin. Than you and all of your kin. You can dig my grave on a pretty green hill. Dig it wide and deep. And put little Matty Groves in my arms, Lord Daniel at my feet, Lord Daniel at my feet.
This is a story about Billy Joe and Bobby Sue. Get high and watch them too. And here's what happened when they decided to cut loose. They headed down to old El Paso. I swear they ran into a great big hassle. Billy Joe shot a man while robbing his castle. Bobby Sue took the money and run. Go on, take the money and run.
on the level, or you're just making it up as you go along?
Johnson, you're wearing your dresses way too high. It's reported you've been drinking and are running around with men and going wild. And we don't believe you ought to be bringing up your little girl this way. And it was signed by the secretary, Harper Valley PTA. Surprised when Mrs. Johnson wore her mini skirt into the room. And as she walked up to the blackboard, I can still recall the words she had to say. She said, "I'd like to address this meeting of the Harper Valley PTA. Well, there's Bobby Taylor sitting there, and seven times he's asked me for a date. Taylor sure seems to use a lot of ice whenever he's away. And Mr. Baker, can you tell us why your secretary had to leave this town? And shouldn't Gwyneth Jones be told to keep her window shades all pulled completely down? Well, Mr. Harper couldn't be here 'cause he stayed too long at Kelly's bar again. You'll smell Shirley Thompson's breath. You'll find she's had a little nip of gin. And then you have the nerve to tell me you think that as a mother I'm not fit. Well, this is just a little Peyton place and you're all Harper Valley hypocrites. No, I wouldn't put you on because it really did. It happened just this way.
Just me and John, it didn't go that well. Paranoia set in pretty early, and although John tried to talk me down, it was a traumatic experience. But when we came off it, I realized how absurd it had been. Dan came over and asked us how it was. Powerful stuff, we told him. He was pretty interested. It didn't take me and John long to convince ourselves that it would be a lot different if we were doing it with a pillar of stability like Dan. We took some more and began setting up our toys. Candles, aluminum foil, and Kool-Aid. We lit the candles and turned out the lights. I put on Tangerine Dream, and we waited. It felt a lot better to start with. John sunk into his chair and smiled behind mirrored glasses. Dan sculpted aluminum foil. I watched the movie. I saw a face in the speaker. Who was it, I wondered. Who did I want it to be? I answered. Like everything else, it's what you want. Dan invited me to join him in a candle. We dipped our fingers in the hot wax, examined them as it solidified, and then melted the wax off in the flames. As our ritual developed, I realized that the pain was only as real as you wanted. But because it was real anyway, Dan and I were sharing something important that John, sitting over there, wasn't. And John knew it too. So I suggested that we go outside and look for it. It, said John, what is it? Dan liked the idea, but John wasn't sure. He was afraid, and I was afraid, But I wasn't afraid of my fear like he was, or so it seemed, or so I hoped. Because I really didn't know what it was, and I was sure John didn't, because that's why he was afraid. But Dan seemed to, because he wasn't afraid. But he wouldn't tell me what it was, or even do more than just hint at it, because he thought I knew what it was, or so it seemed, or so I hoped. So we went outside and we walked in the shimmering slush in which there were these marvelous arabesque patterns that I felt bad about stepping on and breaking because they were so 3D, until I realized that you couldn't break them, you could only change them. And John wanted to know if we were coming to it yet, so I asked him if he thought we were coming to it yet. Dan liked that because he laughed, and I knew it was me and Dan against John. And where we were then, the field was below us about 30 feet. So I told John, it could be over the edge. Why don't you go look? But he was really afraid, more so than before, which was hard, but it was easy because Dan had laughed and he didn't know where I was coming from, even though he sort of suspected, I think, like I suspected, because just then it occurred to me that me and Dan were trying to get him to kill himself. Or if he wouldn't do it, we'd have to do it for him. All because he was afraid, which was why he deserved to die. So he didn't want to look over the edge, because if he didn't throw himself over, then we might. But he couldn't very well not look over the edge, because that's where it was, and he couldn't be afraid of it, not when we weren't. And besides, we were his friends, and didn't he trust us? So he had to. But then I realized that I had been afraid before, and he, John, had helped me. And if I was afraid, and he was afraid, who was Dan to try to get him, John, to kill himself just because he was afraid? And I realized that it should be me and John against Dan. So I told Dan that we should all look over the edge to see if it was there, because I wasn't sure either. And then Dan admitted that he really didn't know himself, and I knew he lied, so I was sure we should make him die. And so we all walked over to the edge. But as we got there, I realized I was in the middle, and maybe it was them against me. So I backed off, and John laughed, and Dan laughed, and just to show them I wasn't afraid, even though I was more terribly scared than I had ever been, I laughed. But I wasn't convinced, and I didn't think they were. And Dan asked me, are you going to look over the edge, or aren't you? So I said he should look over the edge first, and tell me if he saw it. And then John said the same thing, and Dan laughed at the both of us, because he really was afraid. But he couldn't let us know, even though right there, he gave it away worse than he ever could have.
Evil plot. Your life's in danger and you can hear the shot. Your head is spinning and you're fading fast.
How long do you think this kind of fun can last? Your luck will change with a simple motion. I found my idol in a bottle in the ocean. He split the cloud to find the sea. It shows those evil guys how nasty those cheeky guys can be. All right, he got a cheeky guy. Say. As the snow flies on a cold and gray Chicago morning, a poor little baby child is born in the ghetto. And his mama cries, 'cause if there's one thing she don't need, it's another hungry mouth to feed in the ghetto. Well, don't you understand? Your child needs a helping hand. He'll grow to be an angry young man someday. Take a look at you and me. Are we too blind to see? Or do we simply turn our heads and look the other way? Well, the world turns. A hungry little boy with a runny nose plays in the street as a cold wind blows in the ghetto. And his hunger burns. So he starts to roam the streets at night, and he learns how to steal, and he learns how to fight in the ghetto. Then one night in desperation, the young man breaks away. He buys a gun, he steals a car, tries to run, but he don't get far, and his mama cries. As a crowd gathers round, an angry young man face down in the street with a gun in his hand in the ghetto. And as her young man dies, on a cold and gray Chicago morning, another little baby child is born in the ghetto. And his mama cries. Thank you.
Vegetables, canned vegetables. Hey, Duncan, get over here. Need you to stay with me and your brother, okay?
I am.
Well, closer. Come on, help me out here, buddy. Excuse me. Duncan, you're blocking me out.
I want some bologna.
Not today.
But I wanna.
Sorry. Duncan.
I want to put the number thing.
Too bad.
Mommy would let me.
Okay, well, she's not here, okay? She's gone, and she's not coming back, and you're just going to have to deal with it like the rest of us, okay? Duncan.
On May 29th, Michelle Jimenez was killed by a drunk driver. She left behind her husband and four children. Drinking and driving is a crime that kills abruptly, but the pain lasts forever. Friends don't let friends drive drunk. A message from the U.S. Department of Transportation, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Tonight, here on the Tears of the Gods Sound Collage, we are bringing you a show full of stories. Every song has a story embedded in it. And we began that last set with the seed crystal for this concept of a theme. Doc Watson and his version of the traditional song, Matty Groves. And thanks to Chuck Yu for turning me on to that from his 2014 Music on My Radio compilation. And then we heard from the Steve Miller Band, Take the Money and Run, from their perfect compilation album, Greatest Hits, 1974 to 1978. I have this concept of a perfect album where every song just really rocks, no matter what the genre is. And that was the album that, as I sorted out the rules of a perfect album, I realized that greatest hit compilation albums can be perfect in that way. And oh, by the way, every Beatles album, all the real albums, they're perfect. And lots of Led Zeppelin albums are. Yeah, you know, pretty much every Led Zeppelin album, that's a perfect album. AC/DC, Back in Black is perfect, but there are a bunch of albums that are definitely not perfect. Well, in any case, we followed that with a big hit from 1968 by Jeannie C. Riley, Harper Valley PTA. And then one of the extra features of tonight's show, along with, yes, that was me reading, dramatizing an excerpt from my short novel, my philosophy senior thesis, Dare. And that piece was called something like Me, John, and Dan. It didn't have a proper title that way. The project took the form of many vignettes, a lot like Jerzy Kaczynski, the author. I was tremendously influenced by him. And then we'll be hearing more of Dare in the next set. Actually, twice we'll be hearing that. And also in the final set of the show, we'll be hearing more. And we followed that with the Presidents of the United States and Tiki God. And Elvis Presley in the Ghetto. And then our featured artists, Rush. And a song about the future, a kind of science fiction future. Well, that's what we're living in right now, really. Yes, it's all a science fiction future. Red Barchetta from their Moving Pictures album. And then the scariest public service message that I know of. A true story about a drunk driver who killed Michelle Jimenez, leaving behind her family and many difficulties. Backing me up right now is the 17th century Czech composer Anton Dvorak. And this is a performance of his Romance for Violin and Orchestra in F minor. And Dvorak is our featured ambient artist this evening. And I've got one very short story for you to relate in this break. One by Ernest Hemingway. Sort of composed on a dare. The shortest short story. Here it is. For sale. Baby shoes never worn. There's a story behind that. Many stories there could be. Something to make you think in its ambiguity. Well, before we start up the next set, I'll tell you a little bit what's going on in there. We're going to be hearing a song about revenge by the Dixie Chicks, Goodbye Earl. And we're also going to be hearing from Joni Mitchell, The Last Time I Saw Richard. And a Led Zeppelin acoustic song is also in the mix. Like Matty Groves, it's a traditional song. And we're going to be hearing Led Zeppelin's version as performed on Led Zeppelin 3. And Bad Company's going to be finishing us off. I'm going to have two more excerpts from Dare. And they're going to be about my first real serious love, who I called Christine in Dare. But her real name was Holly. And we're going to start things off right now, though, with Johnny Cash. And, well, he's going to be telling a story, of course, and it's a little bit more of a fun story than some others will be hearing. And it all starts right now. A Boy Named Sue on WMFO in Denver.
Well, my daddy left home when I was 3, and he didn't leave much to Ma and me. Just this old guitar and an empty bottle of booze. Now, I don't blame him because he run and hid, but the meanest thing that he ever did was before he left, he went and named me Sue. Well, he must have thought that it was quite a joke, and it got a lot of laughs from lots of folks. It seems I had to fight my whole life through. Some gal would giggle and I'd get red, and some guy'd laugh and I'd bust his head. I'll tell you, life ain't easy for a boy named Sue. Well, I grew up quick and I grew up mean. My fists got hard, my wits got keen. Roamed from town to town to hide my shame. But I made me a vow to the moon and stars, I'd search the honky-tonks and bars and kill that man that gave me that awful name. Well, it was Gatlinburg in mid-July, and I'd just hit town and my throat was dry. I thought I'd stop and have myself a brew at an old saloon on a street of mud. There at a table, dealing stud, sat the dirty mangy dog that named me Sue. Well, I knew that snake was my own sweet dad from a worn-out picture that my mother'd had. And I knew that scar on his cheek and his evil eye. He was big and bent and gray and old, and I looked at him and my blood ran cold. And I said, my name is Sue, how do you do? Well, I hit him hard right between the eyes, and he went down, but to my surprise, come up with a knife and cut off a piece of my ear. But I busted a chair right across his teeth, and we crashed through the wall and into the street, kicking and a-gouging in the mud and the blood and the beard. I tell you, I fought tougher men, but I really can't remember when. He kicked like a mule and he bit like a crocodile. I heard him laugh and then I heard him cussing. He went for his gun and I pulled mine first. He stood there looking at me and I saw him smile. He said, son, this world is rough, and if a man's gonna make it, he's gotta be tough. And I know I wouldn't be there to help you along. So I give you that name and I said goodbye. I knew you'd have to get tough or die. And it's that name that helped to make you strong. Yeah. He said, now you just fought one hell of a fight, and I know you hate me and you got the right to kill me now, and I wouldn't blame you if you do. But you ought to thank me before I die for the gravel in your guts and the spit in the eye, cause I'm the son of a bitch that named you Sue. Yeah, well, what could I do? What could I do? I got all choked up and I threw down my gun, called him a paw and he called me a son, and I come away with a different point of view. And I think about him now and then, every time I try and every time I win. And if I ever have a son, I think I'm gonna name him Bill or George, any damn thing but Sue. I still ain't that bad. Yeah. All right, thank you very much.
Hangman, hangman, hold it a little while. I think I see my friends coming, riding many a mile. My friends, you get some silver, you get a little gold. What did you bring me, my dear friends? Keep me from the gallows pole. What did you bring me? Keep me from the gallows pole. Silver, I couldn't get no gold. You know the way.